In this middle chapter, this middle chapter is called Mendel and the Gene Idea. Now, is Mendel famous enough to be a household word yet? Have you heard of Mendel? Do you know what his first name is? Yeah, Gregor. Gregor Mendel, and do you know him well enough to be able to spot him in this picture? He's the one with the robe. he's a monk. This is he and his fellow monks, but Mendel himself is this one. Anyway, you don't have to know what he looks like for a test. But he was a monk that lived in Eastern Europe, in the Austro-Hungarian Empire specifically, that doesn't exist anymore. But anyway, in the 1800s, and he figured out a lot of how heredity works. And he did this without any knowledge of what DNA is or what a chromosome or a gene is. He just figured it out because he made very careful experiments. And that was unusual in his day. In this part of biological history, biology was mostly a descriptive science rather than an experimental science. So naturalists, biologists, would go out into nature and basically catalog everything. They would describe all the species of plants, animals, whatever, give them names, say what their characteristics were. It wasn't really so much about testing things. It was just about describing things. And biologists in those days did not really have an appreciation of the importance of statistics, since they weren't really doing too many experiments. Well, Mendel did have an appreciation of the importance of statistics, including the importance in any experiment of not doing it just one time, but doing it over and over, using a high number of replicates. You don't just use one subject. You do it many times and record your results and take averages and things like that. That was unusual in Mendel's time, at least for biologists. And probably that being unusual and the fact that he was a monk, he was largely ignored until after his death. One of his papers that he was published but pretty much ignored until after his death was finally discovered, and his findings were so important and so so explanatory that he is now, even though he can't appreciate it since he's dead, he's now considered the father of genetics. And we use the phrase Mendelian genetics in his honor. We're going to be talking about Mendelian genetics in this chapter, mostly. Also some non-Mendelian. But anyway, that's the guy. Let's go to slide 2 and talk about the large amount of work he had to do in order to be successful. It probably helped that he was a monk, because he was able to focus on this and probably very little else. It took many years to do what he did. It took years just to prepare, just to get to the point where he could start other years of work, because he had to make sure he was working with the right kind of pea plants to start his experiments. And you can't speed up time. When you have to raise pea plants over generations, you just have to wait for the seasons to pass in order to get your results. He did use pea plants. He had 7 major experiments, but they all used basically the same technique, which is illustrated here. Pea plants are examples of plants, not only flowering plants, but flowering plants in which the flowers, which are the sexual organs in flowering plants, peas are examples of species in which the flowers have both sexual organs, the male and the female. The female organ in a flower is called a carpel. That's what produces eggs. And the male organs are called stamens. Those have little ends called anthers that produce the pollen, which contains the sperm. And they're both present within one flower for peas. Well, when peas reproduce naturally, that requires pollen from some flower sticking to this little sticky end called a stigma of this carpel, the female part, after which the sperm that are in that pollen will bore a tunnel through the thickness of this carpel all the way down to the base, which is where the ovary is producing the eggs, and a sperm will get in contact with an egg and fertilization will happen. And that happens more or less randomly, meaning that since they're plants, they don't get up and meet each other and go on dates. They just, their gametes get together. And it's random because it could be due to wind or due to which insect lands where. But pollen has to be delivered to the carpels for this to happen. Well, Mendel didn't want to leave anything to chance. He wanted to be the boss of who reproduces with who else. With whom, I should say. So he had to carefully snip off the male stamens of these flowers to keep that pollen from self-pollinating the female part of that same flower. And he then had to go to other plants that he was going to designate as the fathers and carefully brush pollen from those stamens and then take that pollen to the set of designated mothers that he chose as the females' parents and brush the pollen onto those carpels. In other words, he was determining which plant was crossing with which plant. And that's a lot of work by itself, really, but that's just the start of it. Then you have to wait to see whether it's successful fertilization, which means, are these things going to produce the fruit? The fruit is the offspring. The fruit includes the seeds, which are offspring. So in this one pod, in this case there's five peas in here, these are not identical to each other. These are siblings. Each one of these is genetically different. But anyway, those are the offspring, and depending on what you're looking for as your characteristic, those don't tell you anything. You then have to plant those and hope that they will grow up the next year into pea plants, which you can then look at and examine to get just one batch of data. And this is why it took years and years to do this, a lot of work, but he was very careful, took meticulous notes. Well, we have on the top what is called the pea generation. That's what he determines as the original parentals, the parents. That P stands for the parental generation. And so those are what are crossed. And that produces the F1 generation, the first filial generation. Filial means of offspring. And you can then, as we'll see, cross those together, brother and sister basically, cross together to produce the F2 generation. That's just not shown here. That's his basic technique, but he did this thousands of times in seven different major experiments, each of which was different only in what he paid attention to. The technique was the same in all the experiments, but what he cared about as the dependent variable was different in each of the seven. And in three, we can see one of these major experiments. First, though, let me give you a couple definitions. In everyday language, the words characteristic and trait are used pretty much interchangeably, I would say. In everyday language, they mean about the same thing, right? Characteristic and trait. That's not true in genetics. They mean different things in genetics. So it's important to know that difference. A characteristic is just something about an organism. And it doesn't have to be something about it's how it looks. I mean, that's often an example that's used simply because we are so visually oriented animals that we tend to think about how things look. But there are certain characteristics that are determined by how they look to us, but it could be anything, like how well an enzyme works, for instance, is a characteristic. A trait, on the other hand, is some specific value of that characteristic. And so much better than those wordy definitions, it is just to give an example. Hair color is an easy to think about characteristic. All right. We know, though, that there's not just one hair color. There's brown, blonde, all kinds of hair colors. Well, each individual hair color, each value of hair color, is a trait of that characteristic. So black hair is one trait of the characteristic hair color. Blonde hair is another trait of that same characteristic. Okay? Now you see the difference? Well, in each of Mendel's 7 experiments, he paid attention to only one characteristic. Now, there's all kinds of characteristics of pea plants. You know, thousands or millions of characteristics. But he ignored all of them except one that he was paying attention to. And in this example, what is the characteristic? Flower color. Yes, that's the characteristic. And there are 2 traits. Purple and white, yes. Now, Mendel needs to be credited with how careful he was and how hard he worked, but it's probable that he also got a little bit lucky, because in all of his 7 experiments, there happened to be only 2 possible traits for each of those characteristics he cared about. And that's not always true in nature, like the examples I gave. Hair color, right? There's more than 2 hair colors. Well, if there are more than 2 traits, then things work differently in genetics. The numbers are harder to interpret, and he probably wouldn't have been able to figure things out if that had been the case. But there are exactly 2 for each of his experiments, including this flower color one. There's purple and there's white. He also did his crosses in such a way that they were hybrids. And specifically, this is an example of what's called a monohybrid cross. A hybrid means a combination of 2 things that are different, right? Well, what makes this a hybrid cross is that the 2 parents don't have the same trait. One of them is purple-flowered, one of them is white-flowered. What makes it a monohybrid cross more specifically, is that only one characteristic is being paid attention to. So flower color is all he cares about here. Not how long the stems are or anything else about the plant, just the flower color. If you have one characteristic and the 2 original parents differ in their traits for that characteristic, then it's a monohybrid cross. He used, notice, true breeding parents. This is part of his preparation. I said that he had to spend years just to get ready because he had to make sure that these purple-flowered individuals were true breeding purple-flowered individuals, meaning that if you cross them with other purple-flowered individuals in your batch, however many generations you do, you only ever get purple-flowered individuals. They are true breeding. Same with the white flowers. So once he had all that in place, he set up this cross. Purple-flowered cross with a white-flowered individual. And that produced peas, of course, which he then planted and then let those grow into the next generation plants with their own flowers. That's the F1 generation. They are hybrids. And this is where statistics matters. If you do this with two plants, just two individuals, you're not going to be able to really interpret the results. But if you do it with hundreds of individuals, then you have a lot more to work with statistically. All right, now, these results for just the F1 generation are already a bit counterintuitive, kind of surprising. Because way before Mendel ever lived, for thousands of years already, we had recognized that offspring are kind of like a mixture of traits from both parents, right? We just knew this from experience. We didn't care about the biology of it for most of human history, but that's we had noticed it already. And if you consider that, then you might expect, you would reasonably expect, for the offspring of these two parents to not be purple or white flowered, but purplish white. A combination of the two, right? Well, that's not what he found. First of all, there were no white flowers at all in the F1 generation. They were all purple. And this is what I was saying about the importance of doing it over and over. If you do it just once, and you get one purple, that doesn't tell you much. But if you do hundreds, and you get all of them purple, that tells you a lot more. But not only were they all purple, they were all fully purple. They were all just as purple as the purple-flowered parent. No purplish white, in other words. And that's curious in itself, which is why he didn't stop there. He then said, well, what happens if we cross these F1s with other F1s? In other words, these offspring were crossed together to produce the F2 generations, taking another year to do that. And in the F2 generation, what he saw is that white-flowered individuals were in the F2. Not only that, but there were purple as well, purple-flowered individuals as well, and they were outnumbering the white flowers. The purple flowers were outnumbering the white flowers 3-1. In other words, 3/4 of his batch, and you can see his real numbers here, he did it basically 1,000 times. 3/4 of his F2 individuals were purple flowered, and 1/4 of them were white flowered. Well, this brings up another couple definitions. Two categories of traits involved here, one of which is the dominant trait and one of which is the recessive. Recessive is the adjective of recede, which means to hide. And that seems what's happening here with whiteness. Whiteness seems to have hid in this F1 generation and then comes back out in the F2 generation. That's why that trait was called the recessive trait. The dominant trait, in this case, is purple. The recessive trait is white. And dominant traits dominate over recessive traits. So they're more likely to affect the actual individual than recessive traits are. Yeah?
Does the F2 generation still consider hybrids?
Yes, they are hybrids because they are... Well, it depends on how you look at it, actually. Both of their parents were hybrids, and they were hybrids of the same type. So for this immediate cross, it wouldn't really be appropriate to call them hybrids. But they're hybrids with respect to DNA because they contain two different kinds of DNA, one corresponding to whiteness and one corresponding to purpleness. These parents individually don't, right? That's why they're called true breeding. This one contains only the purple version of DNA. This one contains only the white version. All right, well, I'll stop there. We'll get enough to think about for the... Well, actually, let me just show you four. quickly. Four is a table that shows you all seven of his major experiments, so each row is a different experiment. He did it the same way with the scissors and the paintbrush and the planning them and so on, but in each one, all he cared about was some different characteristic. And each characteristic, like flower color or flower position or seed color, has only two possible traits associated with it. And you can see how many times he did it here in these numbers, but that 3-to-1 ratio in the F2 generation for a monohybrid cross is not something that's just particular to flower color. What he noticed, because he did it so many times, is that each of these resulted in a 3-to-1 ratio in the F2 generation. 3 dominant to 1 recessive individual. And that's where I'll stop.